Well, here we are. It's my favorite regular season weekend of the year. It's the Labor Day Classic coming up, and this is the Green Zone Blitz, the podcast. Labor Day Classic Edition, let's call it. Jamie and I with Britt and Gray, of course, as we'll get you set for Sunday's big game against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at Mosaic Stadium. Hopefully the forecast is wrong, though, Britton. I'd rather it be a nice sunny day rather than a rainstorm or showers, as the forecast reads right now.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that might be the weather. We've been pretty good when it comes to Saskatchewan weather this year in terms of the home games, but maybe not this weekend. Might be a wet one, and who knows who that plays in favor for. Obviously, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, great running team and the top rusher in the league, and the Riders, a great rushing defense. They don't allow a lot of rushing yards on by opposing teams, so interesting possible battle brewing here.
Oh, it's going to be a dandy. It always is for the Labor Day Classic. Last year, you'll remember it was the Tavon Campbell pick two at the end of the game that sealed it for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And of course, there's been classics after classics before that, from Brett Lawther's walk-off field goal, Kerry Joseph running it in to the end zone on the QB draw. Hopefully some more of those memories are made between the Riders and the Bombers on Sunday. But as always, we love starting with the listener fan questions on the Blitz podcast. So let's get to it with Dennis's question, leading it right into Kian Schaefer-Baker. I'm hearing he's running around the sidelines like he may be getting close to getting on the field. Does he appear ready if this is true, or is he, they pushing it a bit? They're not pushing it. He almost ran me over on a route on the sidelines while I was talking to some people. He was running full speed, going around the pylons, catching passes from strength and conditioning coach Dan Farthing. It looks very much like Kian Schaefer-Baker, like Sam Emilis was a few weeks ago, ramping up, where he looks to be a week two away from returning to the lineup. It won't be this week, of course. Probably not the Banjo Bowl either, but I would expect right after that bye week, Britton, we could see Kian Schaefer-Baker.
Yeah, after the bye week, definitely targeting that, in my opinion. Maybe closer to October, we'll see exactly where he's at. The thing with CFL injuries, unlike the NFL, is we don't know exactly what the injury was, except it was a knee. Was it a sprain? Did he tear something? So it's tough to say, are they pushing it? Because we're not exactly sure what it is, but just on the eye test, just watching him along the sidelines, you're starting to see that explosiveness there. He's doing these drills. He's testing it out. There was 2 days in a row is a good sign, because that means, hey, on day one, it didn't affect you so much you couldn't come out and do it again on day two. I think he will be returning shortly, like as you mentioned, probably after the bye week. Exactly when that is, not entirely sure, but I don't think they're pushing it, and he's going to be a welcome addition back into this offense when he does get out there.
Oh, absolutely, especially as we know now Sam Emilis won't return until kind of the last week or two of the season, if not just the playoff games, to have Kian Schaefer-Baker running alongside Keyshawn Johnson and Dell Duncan Busby back-to-back, you know, pretty decent games for Dell. He's starting to grow in that role. I like what I saw from Daniel Weeb in that receiving core as well. Johnny Johnson looks good. They have Shamar Bridges, who's now kind of pushed back the depth chart. All of a sudden, if you add Kian Schaefer-Baker to that list, the depth looks a lot better. It was looking pretty thin there for a while for the Rough Riders, but it was a welcome sight this week to really see Kian Schaefer-Baker putting in the work to get back on the field, Dennis. I know there's going to be a lot of people happy about that. Oh, now this is a question from the enemy.
It is.
Here. Yes, over there in Winnipeg. Thanks for the question, Zach. He wants to know, with the Riders, again, having an elite run D, do you think Condell going with a lot of the same short passing plays that were effective versus the Owls? If so, how do the Riders limit the Bombers' offense? Yeah, Tommy Condell, this is more of his style, is what kind of the pass to run, right? He thinks a 1 yard out is just as good as a running play. So kind of that type of offense. And when you have Nick Dembski and you have, you know, Ontario Wilson, those type of breakout receivers, and even throwing it over to, you know, Brady Oliveira, Yeah, I think making this Rough Riders defense go left to right and doing a lot of switches with the secondary, especially having to make those calls and make those judgments, I absolutely believe Tommy Kendall will keep it up. Go with what works. As effective as it was against the Montreal Alouettes, why the heck would you change it? And as Zach mentions, the Riders do have an elite run defense. Running the ball with Brady Oliveira might not be the answer on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll see how effective he is. Of course, Brady Oliveira has had some big games against the Riders when you look back at it, but the Riders have been pretty good at containing the run. And in terms of that kind of short yardage passing plays, that's kind of the book on the Riders right now. They don't give up a lot of long passes. They're one of the top teams at not giving up the big play. They do give up a lot of passing yards, though. So how do teams get there? Well, it's a lot of short, intermediate passes. Kind of take what the defense is giving you, get your 8 to 12 yards on those passing, and put together a big game. And so it kind of leads into you think that that's exactly what the offensive coordinator Tommy Condell would want to do, is what the Riders can't seem to stop. Of course, Josh Bell wants to put a stop to that. He's probably sick and tired of teams throwing for a ton of yards against his defense. Interesting battle of styles. I agree, Jamie. If it worked last week against the Alouettes, why would you not do it against what maybe people might see as a slightly worse defense against the Riders? So I think it expects some of the same, and it's up to these teams to make adjustments, which hasn't always been the case when you look at some of the games this season for both of these teams.
And the way, and he says, how do the Riders limit that type of Bombers offense? I'm wondering how much Josh Bell will want the ball out of Zach's hands quick, where he's not going to be able to, on the film, show those short passes and then do a little fake and then go deep over the top, right? And suck that Riders defense in. I'm wondering if you see, six guys on a pass rush to get to Zach and get that ball out of his hand and rally to the ball, those types of things. Maybe a little bit more blitzing towards Zach Collaros, because as much as that offensive line looked better against the Montreal Alouettes, I think it has its blemishes for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, despite having Stanley Bryant and I'm wondering how much they get after it and probably bringing things from different places where you haven't seen Josh Bell do before, because you're going to have to counterattack what the Bombers can do offensively. But yeah, you have to be aware of those little screen passes out to Brady Oliveira, and away he goes for 40 yards downfield. So I'll be interested on the chess game that always is with football, especially with Tommy Kundel and Corey Mace slash Josh Bell. These guys know each other very well, on going up against each other over the years. So I can't wait to see what that one goes. But for the Bombers, whatever you did last week, keep doing that, because it was a lot better. Okay, another question here from Ken. Will Ottawa win a game this year? Yes, Ken, it'll happen September the 12th. I put it on the board already. The Toronto Argonauts on a very short week after this Monday game against the Tiger Cats. And then they play Ottawa on the Saturday. So they get like one practice kind of in there. Ottawa wins September 12th, coming off their bye week. Might be their only win of the season, but that's my prediction. Yes, they will win a game this year.
Yeah, that looks like the perfect storm for them to win a game, because they don't win that game. I don't know where else you find a win when you look at their schedule. It's tough out there. You think you eventually can luck into one, but they're nearly a full season of losing, right? If you look over the past 2 seasons, what is it, 16 losses now in a row? It's getting bad in Ottawa, and if they don't win against Toronto there, it's tough to pinpoint where that next opportunity comes.
I'll look it up. I think we're near the anniversary, Britain, on the Ottawa Red Blacks' last victory. Ottawa Red Blacks 2025 season. I think it was September, like around September the 4th, when they won their last game. Hold on a sec. I have it right here in the regular season. September the 5th. That was their last. Yeah, we recorded this on the 4th. So that's Saturday, September the 5th, is a year to the day of the last Ottawa Red Blacks victory. So, yeah, so they don't play until September 12th, so it'll be a full calendar year for the Red Blacks' last win. That's ugly. I feel terrible for that fan base. But yes, Ken, September the 12th. If they don't win then, we might have our first 0-18 season. All right, up in Melfort, we hear from Dave. Thanks for the question. Is Ryder defensive issues due to no Campbell Milligan the last couple of games? I think it has to be, Britton. I really do. I think it has to be. I'll call out what I saw in the last game, especially. I saw a team that Toronto going after number 31 a lot in Jonathan Edouard in Roland Milligan's spot. There was a lot of 31 around the football when passes were completed and tackles being made. And he was making tackles too. But yeah, that I think the Argos clearly were looking at that spot where Roland Milligan usually roams a lot more than, the corner spot where Burgess was filling in for Tavon Campbell.
Yeah, I agree there. Now, credit to Jonathan Edouard. For the most part, he's been pretty good for this team. But yeah, that Toronto game, you could tell they were kind of going that way. As you mentioned, he was around the football when they scored I think it was their first touchdown pass or second. It was, oh, who was the guy there? It's unfortunately Edouard, who was right in the area. And so they're going after it. And it's part of it, right? Defense kind of everything works together. You can get coverage sacks. The sacks can force the interceptions or quarterback pressure and stuff like that, right? And it feels like teams haven't been too worried about this Riders defensive backfield, and that's maybe leading to quarterbacks being able to get the ball out quicker so they're not taking sacks and are able to see what's going on out there. As mentioned, this team doesn't give up a lot of big plays, but they are giving up a lot of short passes. They gave up a ton of passing yards to opposing teams, and I think part of that is being without those two guys and kind of having to fill it in. And there's been other injuries. Nelson Lacombe's been hurt. They had to make a move at safety. They've kind of been doing a lot of things out there this season because of injuries. And I think you're starting to notice it. Now, Josh Bell also, he's kind of learning, right? He's learning how to call plays, how to make those adjustments. Corey Mace is allowing him to do things as he wants to do it, not just coming in and taking over play calling because he's not happy with too many blitzes or not enough blitzes. And so I think we're kind of seeing the evolution of Josh Bell as well. And I thought the adjustments he made at halftime to start sending more guys against the Argos was a big part of them being able to turn that around.
Yeah, so and they'll be able to grow as a unit, I think. As you know, it doesn't look like Campbell or Milligan will be back this season, so they have a lot of runway here before crunch time in the playoffs, where we expect them to be to figure out the right mix, the right scheme, and those types of things for this Rough Riders defense. But definitely, they're three deep at that halfback position right now, because Juju Hughes was supposed to be the next man up for Milligan, and he tore his Achilles in his first game. So they're already three deep there. So I know they wouldn't. Edward was picked off up the street. Remember, he wasn't even like in camp. Those types of things. This is going to be some growing pains, I think, for that Riders secondary. But overall, this is still one of the top defensive units as a collective in the Canadian Football League. It's a lot more than just one unit or one player to make things work for the Riders. So, Dave, thanks for the question as we dig into the Labor Day Classic coming up. But we do want to look back at the Rough Riders win over the Toronto Argonauts, 28-24. What a weird game that was. They got lit up. And Toronto didn't, everyone was like, oh, they abandoned the run. They didn't even try to run the ball. They only had four running plays in the entire game. They didn't even try. It was like, ah, let's run the ball. And I think some of those were quarterback sneaks on, third and one, those types of things. When he took, like, I think they had two rushes from the running back actually in that football game. Weird, weird philosophy. It worked in the first half with 295 yards passing, and then the Riders completely shut him out. The only 2 points they scored were the safety that was given up by the Riders offense. That was it for the Argos scoring in the second half. That was a weird game to watch, to see how much that game flipped in the second half.
Yeah, you can't really abandon something you never really commit to, and the Argos never once looked like they were really running the football. We were in the media box, and you were saying, "Oh, here's a run," and the run never came from the Toronto Argonauts.
Yeah, I was. They got to run it now, right? Oh, never mind. No, they're throwing it.
It was an interesting game that, like I said, the defense made adjustments. They started sending a few more blitzes in that second half, and I mean, Chad Kelly would never admit it or anything, but when he took that hit from, I think Roberson was the guy who got there, and he had to leave the game. He never looked quite as confident coming back in after that hit. That was when you started notice he was missing guys all of a sudden, and part of that is the adjustments the Riders made, and I think they finally were able to put some pressure on Chad Kelly and not just let him stick back there and had kind of do whatever he wanted, right? That was a good win for the Riders, in my opinion. That was the first win I can think of this season that really reminds me of last year's team, where that team didn't blow anyone out, but they found ways to win games maybe they shouldn't have and overcome their mistakes. And that win is a big one in kind of proving, hey, what we're doing, what we're preaching, it works. Just keep doing it. Just keep believing in what the message is.
So I understand that, and Corey Mace said it after the game. This is one of those games that tells you, but I'm so that's 3 straight weeks of inconsistent and sometimes bad ball. So I'm not convinced yet that this team has turned a corner and oh, okay, here we go. We talked about the Toronto game being a show me game. They showed it to me a bit in the second half, the defense especially, but Toronto, there was mistakes going on. Like Mike Miller made a bunch of mistakes. Didn't commit to the run. There was a bunch of things that I think he did wrong as the head coach. He even took a delay of game penalty for trying to challenge a play about 5 minutes after the play occurred after a commercial break between the third and fourth quarter, which was absolutely ridiculous. They played the entire WorkSafe Bob last Saskatchewan Pirate. And then he threw the challenge flag. Like there was a bunch going on their sideline that I didn't really think was, high caliber decision making by a coaching staff. So I'm still TBD on where the Riders are. And as much as the Toronto game was show me, okay, the Labor Day game's weird because we've seen a 1-7 Rough Rider team beat a 7-1 Bomber team. We've seen a You know, the like we've seen weird stuff happen on Labor Day, so it almost is kind of a scrub everything game, but there's still a lot of work to do. And the one thing I did appreciate is talking to the players this week. They weren't happy with the Toronto game. Like they were like me. It was like we won, but no way was that a sign we've fixed everything. Like there's still a lot, we still have a lot to work on here. So that's the championship mindset you want. That I liked appreciating was not so much what happened in the game, but what I heard this week going into the Labor Day game was we won, but come on, that wasn't a pretty victory and a smooth ride from what the standard is, especially allowing 295 yards and getting a bit lucky at the end of the half. You make your own your luck. It was a great play by Mike Rose on the block and return by Sales. And then again, weird decision making on working the clock for Toronto, giving the Riders a big chunk and a 55-yard field goal. But those 5 points at the end of the half were quite crucial for the Riders. But it leads into what to expect this week from both these teams. It's the Riders, it's the Bombers, it's the Labor Day Classic, it's the 7-4 Riders, the 6-5 Bombers, and both teams have a huge question mark beside them going, okay, what do they show? Are they going to show Grey Cup caliber team or the Winnipeg Blue Bombers last week or just more inconsistent football, Britain?
Yeah, it's interesting. When you look at the records, you think this is two of the top teams going at it, but it doesn't feel that way, right? Because inconsistency, as you mentioned, has just been following these teams, the Riders, the past few games, and then the Bombers all season. What Bombers team do we get, right? The team that just manhandled the Montreal Alouettes and pretty much dominated them the entire game. or the team that loses to the BC Lions third string quarterback? What Riders team do we get, right? Is it the team that kind of faltered, really couldn't find their way, lost two in a row, or the second half team against the Toronto Argonauts? A lot of questions, but this is just, it's going to be fun. I'm glad that this game has a lot to do in the standings, because it feels like, especially if you find a way to sweep, I'm not picking the either one of these teams to sweep these two games in a row, but if you find a way to do that, that goes a long way to getting towards a home playoff game for both of these teams.
Yeah, this could very well be a repeat of the home and home set against Edmonton. Edmonton wins at Mosaic, and then the Riders go to Commonwealth and win. Because I agree with the inconsistencies of both these teams. The only team I see sweeping are the Riders, to be quite honest. I don't see the Bombers sweeping, but I don't even know if the Riders will sweep this series. It's not usual that any team sweeps this series between the Riders and the Bombers. It has happened, but it's pretty rare that you see it happen. But when you look at the Riders against the Blue Bombers, I know Zach already asked about, you know, it's the run game and the Brady Oliveira against this run defense. But I'm interested on the flip side, the Riders' offense against the Bombers' defense, because I think this Riders' offense showed some progress, especially in the second half. Trevor Harris looked a lot more comfortable with the receiving core. I think Johnny Johnson III coming back as well will help. I think there's just a little bit more chemistry and, of course, knowledge of the playbook when you have Johnny Johnson in there rather than Shamar Bridges, who's been here for a week. But, you know, that Bomber defense right now is in the middle of the pack. They've allowed 28 points a game. They're in the middle of the pack in, you know, yards given up per game. They give up a lot of rushing yards. They don't give up a lot of passing yards. So what do we get if it's Qualy Conley? AJ Olet was a full participant. Maybe tomorrow's depth chart, he'll be there. Who knows? But is this an opportunity for this Riders run game to get going against the Bombers?
I think so. I think when you look at it in terms of what helped the offense, I think it was Qualy Conley's running and just running through guys and being able to pick up consistent yardage for really the first time since he's become the starter. It was his best game so far. And I think that just helped this team being able to rely a little bit more on the receivers and have at least a team defend the run a little bit, right? And not just always have guys backing out. I'm intrigued by the steps that are continuing to be taken by this team, by Daniel Weeb as he continues to get more and more starts. Johnny Johnson. Deshaun Mims has carved out a role right now with this offense as well, and he doesn't have the big stat lines, but he's made some important catches when they have had to go to him. He's come down with the football in big spots, coming down on second down. I'm intrigued, as you mentioned, by the battle here that's going to happen. I want to see a little bit more from Qualy Conley. I think he's going to be a big key to helping this passing offense get through this point where guys are really still learning and kind of learning, getting more and more CFL experience. And I will say, that sweeping doesn't happen often. The Riders did do it last season, so a little bit of recent history on their side.
It's happened, but it's hard to do. That's for sure. And when you look at this Riders offense, they are, when you look at that, you know, rush game, they're not terrible, but they're in the middle of the pack. They're actually not too far off the Bombers when it comes to rushing yards per game, but from that running back position, have we seen a 100-yard game yet this season? I don't think we have from a running back for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders yet this year. We've had 100-yard games as a collective because Tommy Stevens has had some big games with the running back, but I think that's where the Riders will want to take a little bit of heat off Trevor Harris, because when you don't have an effective run game, it's hard for Trevor to really sell that play action and, you know, hold the defense back. You'd like to see them respect the run game a little bit more, because that could give Trevor Harris even more time. And when you give Trevor Harris more time, Britton, he will eat you up, as we found out in the Grey Cup when he said, was his jersey even touched in the Grey Cup game against Montreal? And, you know, he's setting a completions record. So I think it's imperative to get it going early and stay with it. Like last week, the Riders abandoned the run in that third quarter. I think Kwali Conley only had a run or two out of the backfield in that third kind of early fourth quarter area. So that's an aspect of the Riders game I want to see more of. And we know this, if Alex Hale misses a kick, the Riders will likely win.
What a weird stat that's turned into all of a sudden this year. He needs to miss kicks in the Riders when he's perfect, they lose the games. But yeah, Trevor Harris, and we've kind of seen it this year at some points, whether it's after a hit or after a turnover, a player drops a ball, you notice just doesn't quite have the confidence in it. He double clutches, he starts bouncing around, which is not what Trevor Harris usually does. He's usually calm, cool, collected, surgical. He's been off that in a few in their losses especially, and this team needs to ensure that he's comfortable out there. And I think that just the receiving core, Dell Duncan Busby stepping up and getting guys more familiar, getting them more game action is going to help this team down this run here.
Absolutely. As we continue here on the Blitz podcast with the Green Zone, we will get to our picks on who we like in the Labor Day Classic. But let's go around the Canadian Football League as some of the news we have seen. First off, let's start with the everybody loves talking about the rule changes for next year, the field dimension changes. It came out that U Sports Football Canada won't immediately make the switch into 2027, just as a governing body and some of the resources and some of the fields that they have, that they don't have the resources to really do what the CFL will have the resources to do. So if you want 110 yards and 20-yard end zones and the field goal posts at the front, go check out a U Sports junior football, high school football game for now. They didn't say this is going to be their decision forever, but they said for now, this is going to be their decision that they will not follow the CFL. And I'll be honest, Britton, I'm not. Maybe the CFL will change their rules. Scoring's up already, up a touchdown. They said it was going to be up a touchdown with these field dimension changes. It's already up a touchdown in the Canadian Football League with the current field. So maybe you think the Stewart will have a news conference saying, "Ah, never mind, we're good."
I don't think so, because once teams start selling suites with the extra space that they are going to have to do so in the end zone, probably not going to lose that source of income. Because I imagine teams are going to do something with the extra space, and usually it's sell more seats or some VIP packages somewhere, right? But this decision, it makes sense, especially with when you heard that the CFL didn't really talk to U Sports or Football Canada about the decision to do it. They want to see how it works and then kind of go from there, right? And see what financially what they can do, right? It's not the NCAA U Sports has, where billions of dollars are being funneled in
No.
from alumni, funneled in from backers and stuff like that, right? It'd be hard to get new stadiums, and what's the price tag on that? Maybe the CFL can help them out in the future if all these rule changes lead to a new TV money leads to a bunch of things for the league. But it makes sense. I'm not that you have to have the same rules as the pro league, as the developmental leagues. I mean, the NCAA has some rules that are different from the NFL even. But it is interesting that players won't play a full what a CFL game is until they get to the CFL now.
Yes. So a little bit of news on that front when it came to the rule changes for next year from overall collective. One of the other big stories we've been following, of course, is the Rider connections to NFL training camps. And we got some great news. And I know Rider fans will be like, "Oh, but Dante Meyers on this team would be awesome." But it's great news. Dante Meyers is a Cincinnati Bengal. I was able to have him on the Green Zone. If you missed it, check out the podcast. We both got to talk to him over the last couple of years. He is a very humble human. When I asked him, like, "What are your favorite memories as a Rider?" He called out Tavon Campbell's pick two in the Labor Day game. He called out Mario Alford's, like almost walk-off kick return touchdown in Toronto. He said celebrating with Trevor Harris and watching him win a Grey Cup. Like, those were the things that he called. He didn't talk about himself. I was the one who mentioned the big catch in the West Final right before the Tommy Neal touchdown that he made was one of my favorites. But He's a humble guy. He's still being connected to Saskatchewan. He's still following along, talking to his teammates, talking to former roommate Keyshawn Johnson. So great to see Dante Myers. And it's a rarity. It's very rare a guy has that path to a 53-man roster in Dante Myers to pay $100 for a tryout and then all of a sudden make the 53-man. I think Sam McGwavin did it as a Rider back in the day.
Yeah, there's a few who've done it, but as you mentioned, it great story. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy, or guy who took the time to talk to us no matter what, right? After losses, he would talk to us and stuff like that. Glad to see him get a chance to do this and get a chance to be a contributor on that 53-man roster. I know when he first signed there, everyone's like, well, the Bengals, they got a lot of great receivers there. He proved to be one of the best ones they have over there this year, also in the return game. Really happy to see him get a chance to get this opportunity and show what he can do at the NFL level.
We might also have to recalibrate the predictions on who's going to be the next franchise quarterback of the Saskatchewan Roughriders, as Curtis Rourke made the 53-man roster in San Francisco. But the biggest story out of that is how much that organization has liked what they've seen from Curtis Rourke. He actually outplayed, Mac Jones in preseason. He only played one game, but in that game, he was a lot more effective than Jones was. So he's only got 1 year left as the backup in San Francisco, does Jones. If Curtis Rourke continues how he's performed and adapted to Kyle Shanahan's system, I think that will be good news for Curtis Rourke. And I think his path to the National Football League might be a little bit smoother than his brother's was that eventually came back to the CFL.
Yeah, it goes to say something about just having draft capital invested in you, right? Even though it's a late round pick, teams have put something into you. They're willing to keep you around, and Curtis Rourke is showing he has the talent to maybe do so in the NFL. He did have to wait last season, but that helps you kind of just learn the system, go through the mental stuff, get that opportunity. A lot of NFL quarterbacks, in my opinion, get kind of tossed into it really early, and they're kind of set up for failure, especially some of those early picks that don't pan out. That opportunity, just learning it, and plus, I mean, Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers offense is a very quarterback-friendly offense when you look at what he's done there with some of the people who've come through it. But yeah, who's the future franchise quarterback of the Riders? We'll have to wait and see. Is he on the roster? Is he not? I think every CFL team, who is the next guy, no matter where you look, because it's not like the NFL where you draft a guy and here's our guy for the next 4 years. You have to develop a guy or see who else develops something.
Yeah, you need a crop. And I like what the Riders have done the last couple of seasons, keeping a fourth guy around. The fact the Ottawa Redblacks haven't done that is a complete failure as an organization. They only have three quarterbacks. Two of them have zero future as franchise quarterbacks, in my opinion, is Jake Mayer and McLeod Bethel-Thompson. McLeod's pretty well retired. Like, his career's done. Like, seriously, I don't even know why they brought him to Ottawa, because they're not even playing him. So I don't know what the future is there, but they only have another guy on the roster. That's it. And he got a little bit more playing time. Maybe he'll be the starter coming off that bye week to beat the Toronto Argonauts. I don't know, but I like what the Riders have done. Jack Cohn, he throws a good ball in practice. I was actually watching him specifically the last 2 weeks running scout. Jack Cohn does throw a great football, but what does he look like in the games? Because Braden Shager was the quarterback who looked a lot more impressive in the preseason than Jack Cohn, but both are here. Both are still learning the system. That's how you generate the next one for the Riders. Also, Kyle Hergel, first-round draft pick a few years ago. He made the practice roster of the Chicago Bears, so still waiting on that. Albert Reese IV was a Rider draft. Was he this year or last year? I think it might have been this year for Albert Reese. He made the 53-man roster with the Carolina Panthers along their offensive line there. So some of the other Rider connections to NFL training camps. So as we continue around the CFL, to quickly touch on last week's game, I guess. We talked about the Bombers, the Stampeders over the Tiger Cats. That was without Vernon Adams Jr., late touchdown there. And the BC Lions whipped the Ottawa Red Blacks quite handily, 45-24. As the Red Blacks are just getting worse. That's the only thing. Just weird.
They're regressing even somehow.
Yeah, they're getting blown out way more often than they were at the start of the season. Not a good sign for that one. So let's look ahead, shall we, to Friday night, the BC Lions
And we
in
can look ahead,
Montreal.
Jamie, on the new CFL website.
Oh, yes, on the new CFL website. It's out. If you're looking at it going, I'm not sure about this, here's what we were told as media members. The CFL held a little kind of like preview for the CFL media on what the philosophies are and what it's going to look like. This is very much for the what's coming is the app. So the website launches. It's the same company running the website as is running the app. So everything is combined. You update one thing and it updates automatically on both, right? It's one provider. Before the old app about 10 years ago, it wasn't, and it was, this, it didn't look similar. But this is strictly built, really, app first mentality. That's how people connect, right, Britton? You look at the app. Instead of a website. So it is app first. The app will be coming soon as they work out some of the nuances of the new website. So I think it looks slick. I like the stories that you can run through it, on the app. It's going to be awesome. You just go through, you can see first quarter highlights, and you can tap through the first quarter highlights from all the games. This looks a lot more 2026, Britton Gray.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like a website that is modern. It looks sleeker. As you mentioned, it's going to look great on the app, which an app is, as you mentioned, a lot of people use apps now. They don't even go into their browsers on their phone. They want the TSN app. The CJME app is what they go into, listen to CKOM app, right? That's how kind of people are consuming media. And I think finally for the CFL to enter the 2020s and get an app and get a website that's compatible with an app. It's yes, there's going to be some bugs on there, especially when you're on the desktop side to start. Once they work through it, kind of get through things. I know people hate change as well. That's also something people the league has to overcome. I think in the future it's going to be great, and I can't wait to see how they continue to evolve as Stuart Johnson. What does Penn I don't care what you say about him. He's really trying to get this league pushed to 2026 and where kind of other sporting leagues are right now.
And by the way, it is you do a CFL sign in, and you can pick your favorite team, all those things. And as it progresses, it will filter more of the material you want. If you like CFL fantasy, if you like the Rough Riders, those teams, it will actually like put those things above others in your feed. So those are the things the CFL is still working through, but it is new. As we looked at the scores for last week, and we look ahead to this week. The BC Lions, Montreal Alouettes, the Alouettes with a victory or a Toronto win over Hamilton will clinch a home playoff game already on Labor Day weekend. But here's the twist on this BC Montreal game, Britton, that I didn't realize until Dave Naylor told me yesterday. This is the first head-to-head matchup with starting quarterbacks for Nathan Rourke and Davis Alexander. That's crazy to me, but these are the two best quarterbacks, and one of those, QB duels that I hopefully will be watching for many years yet to come.
Yeah, this feels like finally that collision course of the two guys who the CFL is really going to be marketed around and maybe built around for the next decade or so, right? Which is how good they've been. They've been injured, as you mentioned. It's kind of when you think back, well, how haven't they played? Unfortunately, dealing with some injuries. Excited to see how these two teams match up. And maybe the worst news for the Lions is that the Alouettes lost last week, because I don't think they're going to be overly happy with how they played and might be coming out to once again send a message that, hey, don't think we're done.
Yeah, I'm picking the Montreal Alouettes in this one, though. It is a short week for the BC Lions. They stayed out in Ottawa, practiced in Ottawa after that win That's always complicated. I wonder if they're taking the train. I hope they take the train to Montreal. It's a good, great way of travel. I took that train once. I'm going with the Montreal Alouettes. It is a home and home set, though, so they will play next week in BC. I might have a different opinion next week, but this week I'm going Montreal, Britain.
Yeah, I'm going Montreal as well. As mentioned, I think the Alouettes are going to be really ticked off with how they played last week. I think they're going to want to send a message. And yet, short week, it's in Montreal. This just all feels like Montreal should be able to win this one.
All right, Toronto against Hamilton, as we'll save the Labor Day Classic with the Riders for last. Toronto Hamilton in Hamilton, wasn't fond of the way the Toronto Argonauts played. However, I don't know. I'm starting to lose faith in those Tiger Cats. I'm going to go with the Toronto Argonauts here in Hamilton in the Labor Day Classic after they beat up on the Tiger Cats 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Argos as well. We kind of mentioned last week, maybe the hardest team to grasp is the Toronto Argonauts because they look really great at times. They look really bad at times. All I know is right now, Hamilton, they look a lot more bad than good recently, and I'm leaning with the Argos to get a win in this one.
The Labor Day Classic final game of the week will be Monday evening with the Edmonton Elks against the Calgary Stampeders. The Edmonton Elks coming off their bye week in Calgary. Vernon Adams Jr. looks like he will be good to go for the Calgary Stampeders. But again, I'm losing faith in that defense being able to turn it around, and Justin Rankin's found new life. I'm going with the Edmonton Elks over the Calgary Stampeders and push the Stampeders further back in this playoff race with what would be a 5-7 record.
Yeah, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me six times, shame on me. And I picked the Calgary Stampeders a lot just because I expect that defense to just be better, and it's just not happening. I think Edmonton's going to go out there and win. I think they're the better team right now. And they also, I think they realize what an opportunity they have to be able to start maybe getting some space between them, the rest of the West, and getting closer to having at least one playoff game at Commonwealth.
Yeah, it's been a minute for playoff games at Commonwealth Stadium for Edmonton. So as we wrap up the Blitz podcast, we go with the Rough Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at Mosaic Stadium. As always, this feels like a coin flip type game. And when it comes to coin flip games on Labor Day, I always side with the Riders at home at Mosaic Stadium in the some of the best jerseys. The retros will be worn at Mosaic. Might be wet, could be some turnovers, but I am gonna go with the Rough Riders. And here's my score, okay? And I sent this to Rob Vanstone, and he gave me a fact which I couldn't believe. Even Britton Gray doesn't believe it. But it's the 61st game of the season. Sunday's Winnipeg Saskatchewan game is game 61 of the season. It's the 61st Labor Day Classic between the Bombers and the Riders. So I'm going to go with a 61 total score, 34-27 for the Rough Riders. And Rob Vanstone, the Rough Rider historian, told me that score has never happened in Rough Rider history in a regular season or playoff game. It happened once in the preseason, never in a regular season. So a little scoregami on Labor Day for the Riders, 34-27.
I'm kind of in that range. I still can't believe that fact. That's pretty wild when you think about
That's
how
a very CFL
it
score,
feels
right?
like it. It really does. I'm going to lean 34 to 27 with the Riders winning. I once again just at Labor Day picking the Riders. Just we'll see what teams we get from both of them. But I like Saskatchewan at home as they try to continue to build some momentum.
There you have it. We're going Riders. Hopefully you stay dry at Mosaic Stadium on Sunday. But it's always a great week. We've had a great time on the Green Zone, remembering Labor Days from the past with our Labor Day memories. And yeah, we've had some great guests. Bobby Jurison joined us. If you missed the pod, we have Dante Myers, of course, on the Friday edition. Chris Walby, Dan Clark. So can't wait for Sunday kickoff, 5 o'clock, the Green Zone pregame show at 3. Enjoy your Labor Day long weekend, everybody, and thanks for tuning into the Blitz podcast.